Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a surplus to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, Saturday's 20-7 victory over the Cowbell Tech sure was a frustrating watch. But in the larger scheme of things, is it a big deal, small deal, or no deal?
Man, I think it would have to be a no deal. It did remind me of what it was like when I was a student at Alabama watching games and how frustrated I would get at a 13-7 or a 13-10 outcome. It kind of made me realize how spoiled I've gotten under Saban, right? Because this was a 13-point margin, but it felt like it was a 1-point margin at the end of the game.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm in the camp too. I think it's a very, very, very small deal, Aaron, you know, in the direction of it being a no deal. You know, it was a 2-score ball game. We played not very well, and I think there's reasons behind that. But, you know, just as you said, this would be a typical win in other seasons. And then to play this poorly in other seasons, we most assuredly would have lost the game. So the fact that we win against all of the other forces and factors at play, I don't see this as that big of a deal. If frustrating, yes, would certainly want to have played better. But I don't think this projects poorly relative to our ability to compete for a title.
Well, it was kind of funny. What was Saban's quote after the game? He said that we didn't really beat that team.
Yeah.
There was more to the quote, but I liked how he said it. It was like, you know, we didn't really have anything to do with this victory. I thought that was a funny comment.
Yeah, you know, something to the effect that, that we play and typically dominate an opponent. And so, you know, that's how we win games. This game, we were able to win, you know, necessarily without dominating the opponent. So it was almost like a win light.
Yes. Yeah. He said we really didn't beat the Bulldogs. So I would agree with him. I don't think we really beat them, because I will say that, you know, had they had their running quarterback in the game, Prescott, or had they had their backup in the game in that fourth quarter, it could have been a little bit more interesting.
Sure. Had they kicked a couple of field goals when they got down there and said, we've got to try to score a touchdown because we're playing the number one team in the country. And you can definitely agree and connect with that line of thinking. But when you step back and kind of hindsight 2020, they probably wish they had racked up some field goals there along the way.
Oh, sure. And this is the third or fourth game this year where we have just been in that situation where the margin, you know, the current margin late in the fourth quarter with 9 or 10 minutes left is such that they say, well, gosh, they're going to take the air out of the ball and they're going to have a 7 or 8 minute drive. And so we have to go for it on fourth down. And so to our credit, we haven't been in that test yet, right? What if the score would have been 13-7, right? Would they have done something different than if the score was 20-7? So it is a little bit easier that teams have felt like they had to go for it.
Yeah, and I really liked AJ's quote, and you know, I'm paraphrasing, but you know, he said it's good to win a struggle like this. It reminds us, you know, that we're not as good as we think. And I think that's certainly a valid message for the team. You know, 20 points was our season low. But I'll go back to, you know, at the end of September when we played Ole Miss, and, you know, we were geared up for the month of October. And, you know, we made a big deal about October being the month of self-improvement. That as a team, we need to, you know, improve week over week over week. And we did. The fact that we come out after the LSU game, have a little bit of the relief syndrome that Saban talks about. It's human nature. Everyone that's listening to us at some time or another has had that type of, you know, have a bad day at work after having a really good day at work kind of situation. I can't say that I'm overly surprised. And I have to say that we were due a stinker. You're not going to go through the whole season with your A game every week. I think Virginia Tech, we were still kind of asserting ourselves. I think we were purposely not aggressive against Colorado State. I think we had a stinker against Mississippi State.
We did. And with teams in the past, right, just like the Tennessee game in 2009 when we blocked 2 field goals.
Yeah.
Every team is going to have a game that they should have lost and found a way to win. And if Mississippi State would have just had a serviceable quarterback with our 4 turnovers, this could have been a different game.
Well, let's segue to individual players, and let's kind of use that as the message. You know, there are a couple of weeks during the season that I've watched other college teams, and I've certainly fought this, and I'm just going to play right off of what you said there. It's seen bad quarterback play that really makes us appreciate Aiden McCarron. And even though he goes out and throws two interceptions, you know, he was still at times able to rally the team. He still had a streak of 8 or 9 completions. He still had 2 touchdown passes and was still a team leader and motivating to the offensive line. It really makes us appreciate, and we should just pause and appreciate the excellence and the leadership characteristics we're seeing out of the quarterback position.
Oh, sure. And I can't remember what Holly said on the sideline, you know, with us watching the game on TV, but, you know, she got to pick up the audio of AJ kind of laying into the offense. And it was something to the effect of, you know, guys, what are we doing here? I mean, you might remember the phrase better, but it was like, are we standing around as statues? What are we doing here? We gotta get it in gear. And I thought that was, you know, you might remember more of the quote, but I thought that was good to hear something you wouldn't normally hear, that he was really trying to pick them up.
Yeah, and I like how, you know, Kurt even kind of weighed in Blackledge and kind of weighed in and said, you know, Holly did a good job cleaning that up, because it was a little more blue in the raw text. But yeah, basically, you know, standing around like statues, waiting for someone else to make a play. You know, we need to step up and perform. And you know, that's the kind of leadership you get out of someone like an AJ McCarron, you know, who's had success. Everyone, you know, kind of looks to and respects. And again, when you see bad quarterback play from another team, and frankly, you see it more often than maybe you think, it just feels good to know that, you know, we've got AJ back there.
Oh, it does. And I do want to point out one play in particular in the game. And it was at a point where he had made, you know, he was facing a 3rd and 8. And he found Christian Jones down the middle of the Mississippi State defense. They were playing a zone. And we had 3 receivers on the left side that just ran a go route. And Christian Jones was just wide open in between 2 defenders. And AJ hit him in stride for a 1st down. He threw it for like 26 yards. But he turned to the sideline and he was motioning his arm like, you know, let's keep throwing it, let's keep throwing it, let's keep throwing it. And Todd Blackledge said after the throw, he said, you know, quote, you just can't throw the ball any better than this. And literally, AJ was quoted as telling the coach after that, at that point in time, I feel like we could throw it every down. You know, I just kept telling the coach, let's just keep throwing it, let's keep throwing it, let's keep throwing it. And it seemed like Mississippi State was loading the box with, you know, 7 and 8 guys. And it seems like we were, you know, this game, so uncharacteristic of this team, that, you know, they normally show such balance. Well, this particular game, we had so many 2nd and 3rd and longs that we're just not used to seeing. And it put this team in a very different position. But, you know, not to jump around on you, I just thought that was interesting. In that point in time, AJ's turning to the coaches and saying, you know, guys, let's keep airing the ball down the field here. We got something.
You know what? And what's fascinating is, you know, it's easy to look at and say, God, what a bad performance. And, you know, again, our season low, 20 points. But contrast that with 2 points. AJ McCarron saying, I feel like we could throw it on every down. I feel like we could throw it on every down. And then Yeldon goes out and has a career high day with 159 yards. And Drake averages 7 yards a carry. And so, you know, you look at some of those numbers and you say, gosh, you know, maybe it looks like we could run every down. And so even though we had the miscues and look, 4 turnovers, right? And some of those, you know, with opportunities to score and, you know, put another, maybe, you know, another 10 or 14 on the board, you know, the game feels differently if we do that. You know, and so that's an interesting, you know, juxtaposition is, gosh, we only scored 20, but it also at times looked and felt like we could have done anything we wanted to with the ball.
It did. And going back to the 2nd and long and 3rd and long, because, you know, every offensive coach, right, says, I want to make the down and distance manageable. I want 2nd and 5 or 3rd and 3 or something like that. Well, when you go back and look at this, we had out of 65 plays, we had 17 plays that were 2nd and long, and we had 10 3rd down and long plays of 10 yards or more. So we had 27 of our 65 plays, almost 50% of our plays, where we had 2nd and 10 or greater, or 3rd and 10 and greater.
We were very bad on the 3rd down conversions, you know, 4 of 12, you know, literally that gets you off the field, you know, when you should be driving. But
for half of your plays to be 2nd and 3rd and long, and then not to mention your average starting field position early in that game after that first drive, you know, was very poor. I think there was just a lot of contributing factors. So, you know, when the average person looks at the score, they're like, gosh, they only won 20-7. But then when you kind of dig into the numbers and you look at some of the other things, you're like, well, okay, Alabama started at their 8 on the next drive. They started at their 18 on the next drive. One other drive, they started on their 20 and their 22 and their 8 again. I mean, as I look down this sheet of plays, they literally had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 drives starting inside their 22-yard line. And so of the 9 times they had the ball, 7 of those times they started inside their 22.
Yeah.
And that's uncharacteristic for us.
What really is, and you know, and you alluded to this, you know, talk about, you know, staying on schedule with the downs or being behind the chains. And we were behind the chains, like you said, on half of our plays. And so you take a team like Mississippi State, look, they are a game opponent. And they're an opponent, and it almost sounds cliche, but, you know, if you follow Alabama long enough, you kind of get a sense for Mississippi State just being one of those teams that plays very, very tough. And I don't know if it's the proximity of the schools or what it is, but, you know, it's always a tough physical game. When I was in grad school, William Sissom, who had played at Alabama and was a GA under Stallings at the time, you know, we were rolling that season. And, you know, he just kind of shook his head when I was talking to him one day, and, you know, he said, these guys always play as tough. They always play as physical. It doesn't matter how good we are. This is a team that just, you know, it almost feels like we have our number. And, you know, that season, I actually went to the game in Starkville, and, you know, it took freshman Dennis Riddle making a superhuman play, you know, as the seconds ran out to score the winning touchdown. And, you know, so this is a team, and you play in their venue with the cowbells and all that stuff. They're a tough opponent. And then it just felt like we spotted them. You know, we had 5 penalties, they had 1. We had 4 turnovers, you know, they had 1. It seemed like we were playing with one hand behind our back. And you know, again, not our best performance, but there were components on the offensive side that I think that we could kind of circle and feel good about.
Oh, sure. And you know, we like to dissect a couple plays. And, you know, one in particular, where I'll just talk about, because it seemed like the breaks just, you know, were not going our way in some examples. You know, we were sitting there in the fourth quarter, and we finally had a decent starting position, okay? And so we had pinned them in deep. They had a 33-yard punt. We get the ball on the 47-yard line. 1st and 10, Kenyon Drake rushes 21 yards to their 32. That was one of his 4 carries on the night. So now we're sitting here 1st and 10 at their 32-yard line, you know, halfway through the fourth quarter, already up 20-7. And then A.J. throws that second pick. And what's interesting about that pick that gets intercepted at the 9-yard line is when you go back and watch the replay, Kenyon Drake is in on pass protection. And Anthony Steen's man, okay, rushes to his outside. Well, Kenyon Drake, they're doing a play action pass, right? Kenyon Drake is supposed to take the play action and run straight up between the center and Steen. But he doesn't hit the hole where he's supposed to. So Steen is riding his man out, and Drake is supposed to go on his inside. Well, instead, Drake goes on his outside. And when you go back and slow-mo it on the camera angle, he gets between Steen and the defensive tackle. And the defensive tackle, to his credit, says, home. And of course, Drake doesn't even touch him. So literally, Drake shields Steen from the tackle, and the tackle is able to come unimpeded into AJ. AJ throws off his back foot because he's not expecting the guy to be there that quickly. And he doesn't put enough on the ball gets intercepted. So my point is that right there, had Drake just done what he was supposed to do, Steen would have rode his man out, and that could have been a touchdown.
Let me ask you a question that you may have just answered with that illustration. You know, Drake had only 4 carries, which watching the game, I think he had a couple of catches. So watching the game, it felt like he contributed more than just 4 carries. But, you know, he has 4 carries on the same day that Yeldon has a career day, 159, 160 yards, depending on where, you know, whose stat sheet you're looking at. Is something going on with Drake and his playing time? We saw it diminished in LSU, and we kind of talked to that. But this is a pretty significant drop in his carries. When we talked just a few short weeks ago about them being co-number ones, 4 carries on the day is pretty light.
Well, and what's interesting about that is, you know, it was your pattern from LSU. Because if you go back and look at the series, 1st series, T.J. Yeldon, 2nd series, which was only 4 plays, T.J. was in. But then the 3rd series, Kenyon Drake is in the game. but it's three and out. And we pass the ball in, we pass the ball to Drake on first down. He runs the ball on second down, and then he catches a pass again on the next series, on the next play. So actually on the very first series he's in the game, he gets a pass, a run, and a pass. And so so my point is then he comes out, Yeldon comes in, then Drake comes back, then Yeldon. And so they were actually kind of back and forth in the first half. And then when you go and look at the second half is where it changed. And so the second half, to your point, TJ Yeldon had the first four series of the second half, and Kenyon Drake did not see the field until he had that big 21-yard run that I just talked about late in the fourth quarter. Yeah. So I don't have the answer, because the first half, it was your two series, one series that, you know, we've grown accustomed to in old Saban teams. And then something changed at the beginning of the third quarter where he didn't see the field till late. He then fumbled. And when you go and read Saban's, when you basically read his words on the camera, he says, get number four back in there. As soon as Drake fumbles, they zoom over to Saban. I can't read his cuss words, but then I can read his mouth saying to whoever's on the mic, get number four back in there. Yeah. And then you see Drake on the sideline with his two hands on his hips, and he's kind of sulky. Actually, he's got his arms crossed, and he's kind of pouting, kind of. And so,
I wanted to cover that base. And one thing that you said was interesting is on his first, you know, sort of his first possession, he had, you know, two runs and a catch. Well, that's three of his six touches. He had four carries and two completions, and so he gets three. He gets half of his touches on his first drive, but then, you know, something happens. We don't know. But I thought, and I certainly noticed what you did there after the interception, but that was not the first time I had noticed it, you know, on television, that he did seem to have a sulking mentality. And I saw it once, and I was like, because we talked about there's some red flags with this guy, and are there some dots, right? We said dots, and do these dots connect to make this picture, or are these random events? And so, you know, we kind of left it open-ended. But you start to see these types of things, and you think, you know, these dots are, you know, are fewer and far between than maybe they were last season, but they still exist.
Well, here's what I'll say. I think it had more to do with how tight the ball game was than anything else. Because when you look at the third quarter, it was a 10-0 game, and Mississippi State, you know, they scored pretty quickly in the third quarter. And so I think had they not scored to make it 10-7, then I bet you see Drake come out there. But I'm just going to take a stab that when they scored on that weird fumble and they made it 10-7, I think it's like, okay, I got to go back with my ones right now. It's a 3-point game in Starkville with these stupid cowbells. I got to go back to my number one.
Yeah, and you know what? I will agree with you. But what I will, you know, and look, Drake's my guy, and then so I'm going to pick on him a little bit too. I agree with that's why we tightened up the rotation. But it's another one of those situations where you just want to grab him by the face mask and say, but you better watch yourself. Because when coach tightens the rotation and you come over here and sulk, that does not bode well for you getting back into a tight rotation.
Oh, sure. People are watching. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to jump right in. Unless you have something else you want to cover on offense, give me your mini game ball.
Yeah, mini game ball. You know, I want to give it to Brian Vogler. That touchdown he scored in the first quarter was awesome. I mean, we've talked about him being wide left and wide right on all these, you know, trips formations, and he's out there to block, and we gave him grief for missing a block, like, you know, in the LSU game. So we got to give him props here, because AJ bought time. He threw in the ball. He made a sweet move to make the cornerback miss, and then he sat there and just like a hungry dog went for the goal line and gave it up and dove in and made sure his knee didn't touch first. And that was awesome. I mean, I was so thrilled for the kid. That was great.
Yeah, and you know, you're looking at my notes over my shoulder. I've got Vogler down as my main game ball as well. I'm not gonna yield from that necessarily. That was his first career touchdown, and so when you say hungry dog, that's what he was. You know, he knew that it was his chance to eat, and he better cash in, or if he doesn't, it may be a while before he sees another opportunity. Especially with O.J. Howard coming on. So I definitely, you know, tip of the hat, mini game ball to Brian Vogler, his first career touchdown, and the catch, and the effort that he put into getting it, I thought was quite impressive.
Well, and I will say real quick, the effort that he showed might mean that he gets other opportunities in the future.
Sure. Sure, effort is rewarded, right? Effort and attitude, along with ability, of course. But, you know, if we assume everyone has a level of ability or capability, effort and attitude definitely are deciding factors. And so he certainly showed that there.
Hey, absolutely. Hey, flipping it to defense, what was your thoughts, you know, for the defense? Because they knew coming into this game, and if they didn't know right before the game, they knew when the game started that Tyler Russell was going to be the guy. And they've seen Tyler Russell now, you know, twice before. You know, Dak Prescott was, you know, I think he was, you know, leading his team in rushing. And so he brought that zone read option element that, you know, that we struggle with. And so I remember watching the game, and when Russell starts the game early, I'm like, man, this is going to be good, right? We're going to have a statue sitting back there. We're not going to have to worry about the running quarterback. But I actually thought Mississippi State had a decent game plan early in the game against our defense.
Yeah, I think they did, and I don't think we knew that the Dak wasn't playing until, you know, just before kickoff. And so, you know, the whole idea of keep the other team guessing, make them to prepare for two quarterbacks. And so I think we certainly did that, and we certainly, you know, invested probably more effort in the quarterback that they've had that's had much success, you know, and kind of let me footnote the quarterback that plays more of the style that Auburn's going to play. And so I think that, you know, kind of leaned towards preparing more for that style. And so when you get more of a pocket passer, and they still did some things with him, but, you know, more of a pocket passer, that's not what we prepared for. And so, you know, not that we weren't able to adjust, but he certainly came out. Cyrus started opposite Blue again. And so it becomes an interesting topic. And I think we went after him, or they went after him a little bit. We had commented some of the slant patterns that some of the other teams, LSU last week, got after him a little bit. And I think Mississippi incorporated some of that into their Tyler Russell attack.
They did. And they were also, and, you know, Todd Blackledge pointed this out, they were really doing a good job of managing the down and distance by doing a lot of short controlled passes. You know, they were doing a lot of 3-yard passes, 4-yard passes, 5-yard passes. And it was interesting that, you know, Todd Blackledge was like, you know, Tyler Russell needs to run a little bit. He needs to run a little bit to show them that he can run. And as soon as he starts running, he fumbles the ball, but lucky for them, they recovered it. Hey, what did you think about the fact that they did pick on Cyrus because of the LSU game? You know, I thought we might see a little thrown Ballou's way because LSU had success with that, and Ballou really wasn't, you know, bothered a whole lot.
Well, I think that, you know, say what you want to about Dan Mullen and say what you want to about Ole Miss, I think he's smart enough to realize I don't have Zach Mettenberger and I don't have Odell Beckham. And so okay. I can't take two guys that are going to play in the NFL next year and pick on a corner that's going to play in the NFL next year. I can't do that. So I'm going to pick on the other guy because, look, I just know he's not as good. And I don't say that necessarily to knock Cyrus. He's just not as good as Ballou. And we're going to attack him in ways that we've, you know, that they've, you know, had weakness with before. I just think he knew his limitations.
Well, that might definitely be the case. What did you think about their offensive line? I felt like their offensive line, you know, the rushing yards does not bear it out for them. But early in this game, you know, they were getting a hat on a hat pretty well.
Yeah, I think they have a, you know, again, we talk about Mississippi State and everybody looks at their record and that's fair. But they are a tough physical team and they have a very stout offensive line and they typically have. That's one thing, you know, this is maybe even one of their better offensive lines. I think they've got an offensive guard who's being projected as one of the top two or three guards that's going to go in this year's draft. And Charles Sitaway at the tackle position, certainly someone that we recruited very, very heavily. And he's just, I think, an athletic tackle. I think they have talent across the offensive line. And they were able to give us fits at least at times. Now, I thought our defense played well. And sort of our box players, if you will, racked up quite a lot of tackles. And so I was, you know, kind of net-net. I'm very pleased with the performance of our offense. Or I'm sorry, our defense. But, yeah, hats off to their line. They've got some talent there.
They do. And in the passing game, it seems like Malcolm Johnson was really where they had the most success. And it seems like they were really picking on Cyrus and Landon, actually. You know, Malcolm had on that first drive where they missed that field goal, which, you know, was great for us from a momentum standpoint. You know, they had a 20-yard completion to Malcolm Johnson against Collins and a 22-yard completion against Cyrus. So that was 42 of their yards right there just on two pass plays.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a little bit of mentality on picking on Landon that says, you know, what's the best way to neutralize a pass rusher, and that's to run right at him. And so, what's the best way to neutralize, you know, the safety that's all over the field making plays everywhere, is to pick on him in coverage and force him to do this one thing that you know maybe isn't his best skill set. We know that he knows where everyone needs to line up, and he's everywhere, you know, offering help, so to speak, as a safety. But I don't know how often he's attacked one-on-one. And so maybe that was something that they saw in film, and they said, you know what, let's go right into the teeth of this guy, because really we think maybe that may be his point of vulnerability.
Well, and at this early in his career, that might be the case, right?
Sure.
He might understand the playbook, but it's a little different when the guy's coming right at you and, you know, cutting across your face or something. Hey, what else jumped out at you on defense specifically? We had some bad luck with the face mask for CJ and Jeffrey Pagan. You know, two of those penalties was, you know, 30 yards right there. And that just wasn't any, you know, they were just tackling too high, in my opinion. But what jumped out at you on defense as far as some other plays?
I really like the play of Geno Smith getting back in there. His playing time seemed to go up. You know, he plays the money in the dime position, and we don't go to dime a whole lot, but he was in there, and he was, you know, he was providing coverage, and there were, you know, a couple of times where, you know, on key third downs, they were trying to drive the ball to make first downs, and, you know, who was in coverage, you know, Geno Smith was, and I think he only had one tackle. He didn't really do a whole lot in the stat sheet, but what I want to hats off to on Geno is, you know, and I'm kind of giving away my main game ball here, I guess, but what I really want to hats off on Geno is the fact that, you know, we talked about this guy losing his starting position, you know, Jarrett not giving it back, and Geno, you know, hey, don't get lost. Don't go sulk, or don't go get pissed off, or don't, you know, be a jackass about this. Keep your head, you know, keep your nose down, keep your head down, keep working hard. The opportunity will come back to you. And to me, over the last couple of weeks, it just feels like the opportunity is coming back to him, and it's a different opportunity, but it's how he performs in this opportunity this year that really sets him up to for an increased capacity next year. And look, hey, he could still be a season's hero with what we have left in this season. So I think we're going to see him a lot more on the field. And so I felt, you know, Geno's play to me really stood out.
It did. And I noticed he didn't get any pass breakups in the stat sheet. And I think he was just gypped, because I think there was two pass breakups that I remember him doing that he did not get credit for, that I think he should have got credit for.
Yeah, I think the stats, you know, and sort of the metrics that they provide do not appropriately represent his performance on the field Saturday. You know, he had that tackle, and had he not had that tackle, he wouldn't show up in the stat line, and, you know, that would be a most incredible, you know, misstatement. Plus, I'm not showing up in the stat line either, but, you know, again, he was in a dime, so, you know, just package it appropriately. But when he was in there, I thought he was outstanding.
No, I agree. Hey, I wanted to talk about that fumble, you know, at the goal line, yep, for Mississippi State when, yep, they got their touchdown. You know, TJ had fumbled the ball at our 36. They got to start in great field position at our 46-yard line. So, you know, their scoring drive, they didn't have to go very far. They started off with a 17-yard pass to that Malcolm Johnson. So here we are, three of his catches. He got 84 yards on the day. Three of his six catches totaled 60-something yards. But on that fumble, that was a great call for them to run Tyler Russell, yeah, on first and goal. It's a great play. It was a great play call. And so when the fumble occurred, I am just so livid at the two or three Bama guys. And I think I remember, yeah, Adrian Hubbard. I think, yeah, I remember Jarrett Williams. I'm, yeah, trying to remember who else. He was just signaling first down the other way. And to Landon Collins' credit, Mr. Nose for the football, he was in there going after the ball, and only because a 300-plus-pound lineman stole it from him, you know, because he just got out physical by a bigger man, you know, did that occur? But I'm glad Saban talked about it in the post-game press conference. Man, those guys would be running bleachers. I'd be coming up with all kind of drills for those guys. That is not what we do at Alabama.
Yes, it was very intentional in how he covered that point. You know, hey, guys, instead of just pointing where the ball is and who has it, why don't you go get it? And Landon Collins was right in there. You know, I don't think he had a good grasp on it. And, you know, sit away, you know, there again, he just wrestled it away from Landon. I think it was an appropriate call that they recovered it. What I don't think was appropriate is I think that maybe he should have been called down for lack of forward progress. And, you know, Iowa State, who lost to Texas, would surely have something to say about that. And I think that, I think if you go back and look at that, that he may have been down by lack of forward progress. But I don't know necessarily that that prevents them from scoring that touchdown.
Well, to your point, they definitely got to have three or four offensive linemen get behind him and help push him in the right direction there.
Yes, which is supposed to be against the rules. It's hard to sort of legislate that out 100%, but I thought that was pretty egregious, you know, the way that was performed. Again, I thought he should have been down for lack of forward progress. But I can't, you know, again, talking about the performance of the defense, I guess when you hold them to 7 points that scored by an offensive lineman or a fumble recovery, your defense has done a pretty good job.
No, and given the turnovers, right? I mean, given the turnovers and where Mississippi State got to start with the ball, I mean, that is a good point that you make. I mean, you know, but that's why I said at the beginning of the podcast that we're fortunate that, you know, at the end there, Tyler Russell hurts his shoulder tackling Ha-Ha, and they have to bring in the true freshman who was horrible. You know, was way above his skis, because I think we were very fortunate at the end of the game that, you know, that the third string quarterback was in the game.
Yeah, you know, at various times we've had a little bit of fun with some of the media that covers the team, and so I'm gonna kind of go in that vein. I don't know if you read or saw all of the post game press conference, but can you believe? And I don't know who it was. I'm not picking on anyone necessarily, you know, by name. But can you believe the media guy who asked Saban, you know, why did you take the penalty instead of giving them 4th and 1 on the 2? Why did you take the penalty to make it 3rd and 6 or 3rd and 7?
Yeah.
And my thought is, you know, dude, they pay you to follow football. You know, prerequisite to that should maybe be a little bit of knowledge of the game. I thought, you know, that's textbook what you do in that situation. Why would anyone need to ask that question?
I agree, right? Why would you give it to him at the 1 when you can give it to him at the 6 or 7? I thought the fact that he had to even answer the question by saying that the offense's likelihood of scoring is increased when they are so close, you know, that alone, that he had to say that, right? No wonder he has a dislike for the local media.
Yes.
National media is not going to ask him that stupid question. Okay. The reason he berates these guys on Monday is because they ask these questions.
Yes.
Hey, what else on defense that jumped out at you? I do want to get your take real quick on, you know, at the end of the game, granted it's, you know, granted they know that they're passing the ball, but I thought that was a nice bull rush by Adrian Hubbard on his sack.
Yeah, you know, we should give credit there. He definitely had that sack there. And what's funny is, you know, I even almost sarcastically, you know, yelled at the TV, "Come on, Hubbard, make you a play." And you know, he said that's when he sacked him. So maybe I just should yell at every play. So if the dude's got capability, he's a really good player. Someone will still draft him very high. I don't know that I would draft him as high today as I would have in August. You know, he's a very talented player. I personally am just overall disappointed with what we see from him. And so, you know, I'm glad that he gets the sack. I wish that was his 12th sack of the season.
Oh, sure. I just mentioned it because on that play, he showed the potential where he just dominated that left tackle that we were hoping to see all season.
Right. I don't necessarily want to go into detail on every one of these players, but, you know, Trey Dupreece, and we've kind of kidded about him, but, you know, he had 6 tackles, tackle for a loss, pass breakup. It's a very physical play. Jarek had 5 tackles, 1 pass breakup. At one point, he looked like he was hurt, and that made me nervous. You know, Ashawn had 5 tackles, a tackle for a loss, and a sack. So we had a number of guys really, you know, and it's maybe because they held the ball for so long and a lot of short, you know, short, like you said, short passes. But, you know, we had a number of guys step up and make plays. I was overall, and I almost had to go back, and it felt like they gained more yards than they did. But if you look at it holistically, 52 yards rushing, only 197 yards of total offense. That was a championship caliber defensive performance.
Oh, it was. And, you know, I want to touch on an article that Andrew Gribble put out for AL.com, just because he, I don't want to take credit for this. He just mentioned that we had 11 sacks in our first 8 games, and we've now had 6 sacks in the past 2 games. So I thought that was an interesting stat. In this football game, not only did we have two of the sacks, but we also had six quarterback hurries. And so I do think we definitely, as the game wore on, we started affecting the quarterback more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he got a little nervous back there. And they brought in their third-team quarterback, you know, and I think he's a redshirt freshman. And apparently he had a really good high school career. But he just did not strike me as a quarterback sort of body type. He looked more like, you know, a freshman middle linebacker that hasn't spent time in the strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, they talked about he had won a state championship for his high school the year before, but that he was like 6 foot tall. And so Todd Blackledge said, you know, Alabama needs to rush him in his face. And about that time, Adrian Hubbard comes in with, you know, with his tall frame right in front of him. And I definitely feel like he was mismatched. And that's where I made that comment earlier in the podcast. I mean, if you think about the fact that it was a 27 game, they get the ball on the 38-yard line in the fourth quarter, and they get the ball starting on our 24-yard line, and they come away with no points on both of those drives. So anything else on defense before we go to special teams?
I'd say give me some Mosley report.
Man, you know, for Mosley, you know, he definitely seemed to have a little a chip on his shoulder in this ball game. He seemed to want to set the tone early. He made a couple really physical tackles out of bounds with Perkins on the sideline. And then he was credited for three of the six quarterback hurries in this ball game. And so I definitely think that he had your typical well-rounded performance.
Yeah, I agree. Eight tackles, a forced fumble. He seems to be playing, you know, even just over the last couple of weeks, with more of a chip on his shoulder and more of, you know, maybe there's a leadership component. Maybe there's just, you know, he definitely wants to win a championship again before his time is up. And I thought this watching the game, and then I think I actually saw a couple articles, you know, speaking to the point of, you know, he is positioning himself from a draft stock position very, very well with his physical play, his sideline to sideline, and the contributions that he's making. You know, you and I said, and this is our fourth year doing, you know, the podcast, and you know, I remember back to, you know, doing the podcast after the Florida game when he really kind of burst on the scene. And, you know, you and I both said that, man, watch this freshman linebacker because he's going to be good. And, you know, if we were just two guys sitting around the bar saying that, you might just kind of be able to laugh it off. But, you know, it's out there. It's on the interwebs that, you know, we have a show recorded. I just, you know, he's a guy that has played very, very well. And you know, both of us have been high on him, you know, almost since day one. So he's almost like our podcast and mascot or something. I don't know. I really like the kid and really pleased with his performance Saturday. And, you know, and then, like I said, the last couple of weeks has been really outstanding.
Well, I will just say very quickly, I think he is just – it's almost like he is in the last couple of weeks more so than at the beginning of the season. It's like I think both he and AJ, who we said, hey, these are fifth-year seniors. They came back. They didn't have to. Their family, you know, has provided for them. They can, you know – we basically said they were coming back to show the leadership that they could show. They didn't have to come back. There was no reason they had to come back. They each had two rings on their fingers. And I think both of these guys are willing their team on at this point in the season. They're picking up the slack more so than the other players on the team.
Yeah, it's definitely a home stretch situation. You know, they can smell it. You know, you start the season and you can really want to win it, but it's a long season and you don't know how injuries are going to shake out. You really don't know the kind of the personality of the team. And I think as we kind of enter, you know, really the de facto home stretch, you know, LSU, Mississippi State, we've got this game with Chattanooga. You know, it's Auburn. It's the SEC championship game. And, you know, so we're down to, you know, three games, two that, you know, that are even potentially threats. They can smell it. They can smell it, right? They've got muscle memory relative to getting through this part of the season. And, you know, we have lost games in this stretch of the season that have almost cost us. And I think they, not only do they want to win it, but they want to win it undefeated. So it's fun to see them kind of rise up, you know, at this kind of stage of the season.
Absolutely. Who's your mini game ball on defense?
I've already given it away. I'm going Geno Smith, just his increased playing time. He didn't go into the tank at the beginning of the season, like, you know, maybe he could, like maybe some other players would. And his playing time, his opportunity is sort of coming back to him. And I think that's what you want to. That's what you want to see from a guy. That's a guy that's bought into the process. And that's a guy that's going to have success over his career. And we've certainly seen it. And I think we're going to see more of it. So I'm tipping the hat to Geno Smith.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give it to A'shaun Robinson. You kind of highlighted his stats. I'm going to give it to him now because next year he will not qualify for a mini game ball award because he will be one of our headliners. So I'm going to give it to him for having five tackles at the nose tackle position, which is awesome on the stat sheet.
Absolutely.
Hey, flip it over to special teams, man. What do you? I read an article that said we have the best punter in the nation. Is that possible?
What I think is fantastic about that is, yes, he statistically would rank as the best punter in the country, but by official NCAA guidelines, he has not had enough snaps to even qualify for that. And so if you just took his average versus the others, he would rate, but he has not punted enough, or our team is too good, if you want to look at it that way, for him to qualify for that award. And so I just think that's pretty ironic. But I think he's every bit as good as his stats there. And this is a guy, look, we've given him grief. And this is a guy that through his career has improved. And here he is, you know, quite literally the best punter in the country. That's pretty darn impressive. I think you have to go hats off to him.
You do. And I think in a game like this where field position was so important, right, those couple of punts that he made was just, you know, was just awesome. Where, you know, I think the kick returner for Mississippi State, you know, aided in this a little bit with some bad decisions on his part. But for him to, you know, have four punts averaging 55 yards, you know, he had one that was 63 yards on the night. Career high. And just, you know, to see two of these downed inside the 2 yard line because the punt returner made poor decisions was nice to see.
Yep, absolutely. And I think, you know, kind of hand in hand, you know, Kate Foster's a player that we've given some grief. And this season he is, you know, he's kind of rubbed it back in our face. And, you know, I'm actually, I guess, pleased with that. He had two field goals. I think he's, you know, knock on wood, you know, he's only got one, you know, one miss on the year. And he keeps racking up the hits. And so hats off to Kate Foster.
No, absolutely. And there were nice solid kicks right through the middle of the uprights, right? There was no question that, you know, when it left his foot, there was no question that he was going to make it, I guess.
Yep. There were no, you know, no body English on those things. They were straight and true, you know, again, which just goes to build further and further that confidence. And so I honestly, you know, I know that was it last year or the year before we brought in, you know, sort of a consultant to help us with the kicking game. And we did see some increased performance, you know, kind of a step there. I don't know what we've done. There's not been a lot of articles. There's not been a lot of talk on it, but we've done something and it's the right thing because both of these guys, you know, you could plot on a chart the improvement that we've collected from them. And, you know, I think it's one of those kind of silent things that if you don't have it, you don't know, especially maybe the casual observers. If you don't have it, you don't know that you don't have it. But you take a team like Mississippi State, who in other phases of the game played very, very well. But their kicker missed a field goal coming into this game. I think their kicker was 3 of 7 or 3 of 11, just a horrible number. And then their punter, I think, was averaging 36 yards a punt on the season. And so those are the types of things that, you know, if you don't know to look for them, or if you don't think about them, or, you know, you're refreshing your drink during special teams plays, you don't know why your team's not as good as maybe you think it ought to be. It's for reasons just like that. And so when you take a Cody and a Cade, they are contributors to our success.
Oh, they sure are. And I don't know which of Cody's punts this was. It might have been his last one on the night. I want to give a little love to DeAndre White because – on him and Landon Collins was down there together on one of Cody's long punts, but on his other long punt, DeAndre White was the one that was down there a step quicker than Landon Collins. And he had the composure to just bat the ball out of bounds at the sideline at the 2 yard line.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a phenomenal play.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the kind of thing that goes, you know, again, it goes mostly, you know, unnoticed. It doesn't show up in the stat sheet or something, but, you know, but if he doesn't take that, that effort and that ball rolls into the, into the end zone and they get the ball at the 20, that's a significant difference. You know, it's 18 yards, which, you know, by itself, it's 18% of the field, but that's a significant 18 yards, right? It significantly impacts how they call plays when they're on the 2 versus the 20.
Oh, it does. And one other thing I wanted to mention is at the beginning of that game when the Mississippi State punt returner fumbled that punt, that was just a bad break for us, that Landon Collins was just too fast down the field. Because yes, when you go back and watch the replay and it hits off the boy's chest because he didn't catch it with his hands like you're taught to do, Landon Collins is right in front of him in his little, you know, in his space, so to speak, if he wouldn't have, you know, called for the, if he would have called a fair catch. And the ball hits the front of his helmet and then it goes backwards 15 yards to allow, you know, him to get back on the ball. And so if Landon's not down the field quite as quick there and the ball just fumbles, Landon recovers it and we get the ball back there.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think about, you know, Christian Jones' tackle on one of our punts to them? He could have been rung up for that. I was surprised that there was, you know, with all the elevated attention on the sort of the head-to-head or the targeting blows, you know, we could have another discussion about whether or not we agree or like those. But given that that's a priority, given that those flags are flying, I was surprised that he didn't get rung up for that.
Well, it makes you wonder what they call a defenseless player, right? You know, is it just a wide receiver in the game? Because a punt returner can be that as well. I definitely think there should have been a flag if they're going to. Okay, based on the rule that I don't love, there should have been a flag. And technically, if we follow the rule that they've laid out this year, he should have been ejected.
I think had they, you know, we've had that called on us twice.
And gotten
the player
the
about the spec in the game. I think had they thrown the flag there and forced the review, he would have been, he would have not, his play would not have stood up to the review. He would have been kicked out.
He would have been kicked out. And you know, not to go into this on the podcast tonight, if these kids would just put their helmet under the shoulder pads like I was taught in football and wrap up around the waist, this wouldn't be a problem. It's real simple. Hit the numbers. Don't go anywhere near the neck and the face mask. If you put your helmet under the bottom of the front of the shoulder pads there, right there in their gut, no problem whatsoever. It would have been a great tackle.
Yep. If you tackle the waist, all the talk, and you know, there's a lot of it in the NFL and college as well, a lot of the talk about, you know, you either have to take their head, you either have to hit them in the head or you have to take out their knees. I just think that's baloney. Hit them in the numbers, wrap up around the waist, and drive them into the ground.
See, that's the last thing you said. That's what we don't see enough of in football, right? If you pick them up and you put their helmet right above that belly button and you drive them into the ground, you're going to cause a lot of fumbles. That's all you got to do.
Yes. That is make our ass quit.
Absolutely. Hey, anything else on special teams?
No, I don't think so. I just continue to give hats off for our performance on special teams. A lot of quality play that we're seeing there, and so I'm pleased with our special teams.
Well, I will say really quickly, because I asked you, and then I had another one. We have, you know, last 2 weeks we had not done grading kickoffs, so we only had 3 of them, but they had the longest kickoff return was 19 yards. So I just wanted to point that out, that out of 3 kickoff opportunities, much improved from the 2 weeks before.
Yeah, and it's frustrating, and it's hard to watch. Look, and we've mentioned this before, there's things about watching it on TV that has their advantages, things about watching it in person that has their advantages. You know, you and I do this as a hobby, so we watch the games in person that we can. We watch the games on TV that we have to. And so this is a game that we watched on TV. And so we talked specifically about watch Landon Collins, where he lines up, and let's see if we move him around. And I was not able to tell if we had moved him around a little bit. I have to think that maybe we did, but I was not able to discern that.
I was not. I did notice that they did not double-team him on special teams. So that was interesting that they chose not to double him. Hey, give me some thoughts on Chattanooga, man. All I know about Chattanooga is we played them in 2009 and we beat them 45-0.
Yeah, I think that approximates what we'll see. I think we had the bye week before LSU, and so we've come back and played a couple of weeks. You know, when you get up to 6-7 games, it's time for a bye week. I don't think we've played enough for another bye, and so I think playing someone like Chattanooga is better than a bye week, because we get to maintain the routine, and, you know, especially kind of leading up to, you know, Auburn next week, you know, the following week and then the SEC championship game after that. So we almost get a break, but we still keep the routine, keep the focus. We're going to play more of our bench, which gets some of those guys more back involved. Starters, hopefully we treat it like, you know, the third preseason game in the NFL, where the starters, you know, run out for a couple drives, and then we get them out of the game because we can beat these guys with our backups. And that's what I hope to see. You know, Saban will play them longer than that, but I hope that, you know, we get them out there, you know, at least a half. And I still see us kind of rolling up a 48 to 3 kind of game. We may well shut them out. You know, I'll say 3 just because, you know, you could kick a long field goal or something, but 48 to 3 kind of game.
Okay. Well, I did see that they were 8-3. Interestingly enough, they did play one common opponent this year in Georgia State, whereas we won 45-3 with Georgia State. They won 42-14. And interestingly enough, you know, this is where stats are kind of funny. They come into this game, given the level of opponents they've played, they're actually ranked number 18th on rushing offense and 11th in total defense. So I think some of these stats are going to get inflated a little bit in this ball game because they have played the likes of Furman and Citadel and Elon and some of these other teams. I definitely think that I hope this is a game that we can see the guys nobody knows their names play the whole second half. I hope this is a game where the starters get in there for, you know, I'd love TJ Yeldon to get 10 carries and go sit down. You know, let AJ do his thing, and then let's just let Blake Sims run the offense, as frustrating as that is for me. But I'd love to see a 48-3, 48-6 kind of ball game, and it'd be the second half that you and I enjoy to watch where we watch the Alabama Tide players of the future.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree. I definitely want to get the starters out, get them some rest, and then get to see some of the backups and look forward to, you know, most definitely look forward to that. And, you know, again, we've done this once before where, you know, I am dialing in from a tin can. So I'm not at the, you know, I'm kind of not in front of my home base computer. I know that there was one, at least one iTunes comment, another review from iTunes that we saw. And it was magnificent, and so I'm going to tease that. The individual put that out there. We're going to spend some time with that. I just want to confirm me. And that put us at number 40. So that was 40 out of our target 50. And so I'm going to make a push, you know, here in these last couple of weeks that, you know, if you listen to us on iTunes, please go give us a review. It doesn't have to be 5-star. We just ask that it be authentic. And we certainly enjoy you guys listening. So, Tom, I've got, if you got something you want to take us out on.
Man, no, I'm good. I'm just ready to play this one so we can get on talking about some Auburn Tigers.
All right. So what I hear you saying is we want some moccasins.
Yes, we want some moccasins quick and get it over with.
Very good. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening and roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll tide.